Welcome to the Magnificent Midlife Woman, how to feel fabulous in your skin, your body, and your life when you're 40 plus. I'm your host, Sherry Clark, and I'm so glad you're here. The next 30 minutes promises to be life-changing, full of solution-based content featuring an expert who speaks from experience. And believe me, I'm going to ask the questions you want to hear the answers to. So let's get started with today's special guest.
Safe to say that one of the most stressful events you can go through as an adult is a divorce. It's often expensive, sometimes prolonged, and can leave emotional scars on both partners and the rest of the family. Our guest today says there's another way. Kira Gould, I stopped because I had doubted myself. Okay.
You're right. You said it totally right.
I said it right. And it was, yep. I have the phonetic pronunciation wrong up here. So I'm taking that off. Okay, good. All right. So the second time, this is a real take. Five, okay. Four, three, two, one. I think it's safe to say that one of the most stressful events you can go through as an adult is a divorce. It's often expensive, sometimes prolonged, and can leave emotional scars on both partners and the rest of the family. Our guest today says there's another way. Kira Gould is a certified divorce coach with a practice she calls Getting Unmarried. Kira is like a best friend in the sense that she understands and has the compassionate soul of one who's been there, but she also brings the important reminders to the table. She asks essential questions about money, career, custody, and property. She'll counsel about setting boundaries, dividing assets, and establishing support. But most of all, she provides hope that ending a marriage with dignity is entirely possible. Kira, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You know, you've said that ending your marriage with integrity begins with the initial conversation, that you need to actually like set the stage right from the get-go. Can you elaborate?
Sure. I think the tone is important and setting intentions even before you have that conversation is important. How do you imagine this unfolding? How do you imagine the path you're going to be walking down to ending your marriage? If you start out on a note of conflict, a fight, I hate you, I'm over, it's done, it kind of leaves a bad taste in everyone's mouth, not just the other person. And it's kind of that energy, I believe in the energy that we're setting and those intentions. If we have sort of a more loving or positive energy, or at least neutral, sometimes it's really hard to get to positive if your marriage is on the rocks, but at least neutral can really set the stage for a better course on your way through to divorce, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And as you were talking, I was thinking about all of the relationships that we have in our lives that are important, that in many cases, relationships will end. Like, I'm an employer. And so whether an employee gives me notice or I terminate an employee, where that initial conversation comes in, it doesn't just happen typically out of nowhere. It really makes sense. But with my employees, I don't have the emotional charge that I have.
Yes.
With spouse or someone I have taken a vow with.
Sure, exactly. So planning that conversation might need to happen, right? If you know you're going to go into it with out of control emotions potentially, or you don't trust yourself to stay on point or focused, planning it in advance, role playing it with somebody, if that's a girlfriend, a parent, an employer, a therapist, someone who you feel close with, and try things out and say, how does that make you feel as the person who's listening to this? Is that triggering you, or does that sound attacking? Or, and a lot of times you have to take that other person out of it in some way. This conversation isn't the time to be finger pointing and saying, you did this, you did that, you did this, a lot of blame and shame and all of that, because the other person will get defensive. And what you want at this outset is as much openness if possible, because you're going to be asking someone most likely to kind of follow you to a place they weren't planning on going, maybe, or they don't want to go there. So having sort of neutral points or or you put it about yourself. You know, I am in a place where I don't feel comfortable, or I don't feel fulfilled, or I need to do something different in my life, and really take ownership for as much as you can. And one of the things I work with my clients on is getting to some sort of place of gratitude. It doesn't have to be huge, but just a little bit of gratitude. What did you get out of that relationship that was positive that you can touch on in that conversation? You know, we had two beautiful kids together as an example, or we built this amazing business, or look at the house we created together. We did something together that is positive. But the relationship, like your employee-employer relationship, sometimes it runs its course, right? We're living a lot longer nowadays, et cetera. The relationship, we may have outgrown it, and that's okay. So coming from that place of neutrality or positivity can sometimes help that other person from becoming really defensive, staying a little bit more open to what you have to say.
Right. I like that a lot. What are some signs that a marriage could be in trouble?
Oh, there's a lot of them, but one of the experts I love to read and reference is this researcher named John Gottman, and he and his wife actually have studied couples, and they can tell within, I think it's like 90 to 95% certainty whether a couple is headed towards divorce or headed towards a long-term successful marriage. And the number one thing they reference is kindness. So if your relationship is lacking in kindness, and that shows up in so many different ways, right? Being dismissive, being negative, putting someone down, not showing up for them, not spending time together. You know, there's a number of points where you might not see eye to eye, but do you have kindness toward each other or respect? If that is lacking, that is a sure sign that things are in trouble. And it's something worth addressing up front as best you can, as quickly as you can.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one. Is there a way that you think to come back from the edge if the kindness has gone out of the marriage?
Sure. There's a number of ways in which I work with my clients and say, first off, the most important thing is, are you willing to give anything more to this relationship? Because sometimes you're just past the point. You have nothing left to give. You've already, by the time they come to me, they've tried everything and they're just tired and done. Other people are not sure. And they say, yes, there is something more I'm willing to give. And I say, okay. And then we usually turn to the five love languages by Gary Chapman, if you know that work.
Yes.
It's a great work. Because a lot of people have not heard of it and they don't understand that we communicate our love for someone in different ways, or possibly we do. And Gary Chapman's five different love languages are a great place to start and see, are you guys expressing your love, but you're just not seeing it? You're just not feeling it. You know, the five love languages are gift giving, quality time, words of affirmation, acts of service, and physical touch. And, you know, some people are just, they hate gifts and the other spouse loves gifts. And the one giving the gifts all the time and the other one wants quality time. I want to spend time with you. I don't want these gifts. What is this, you know, this stuff you're giving me? And so that builds up resentments and confusion over time. And so if you have something left to give, you're willing to try something on, maybe see if there's something missing in the terms of how you're communicating with each other. Is there a disconnect in some way? And you can start by simply just trying to learn their language and do little things for them. If that isn't working, I get it. And you have to go maybe to a counseling, et cetera. I recommend trying, you know, I'm of the belief that marriage, if it's worth something, you should try saving it. You know, these are important relationships that we have. So I'm all for do whatever you can, but if you pass that point, I understand that happens.
And if you are past that point, is there a right and a wrong way, air quotes, to ask for divorce?
Sure. I mean, that goes back to our first question, I think, of setting that intention, right? Often people are not in the same place. People in a couple, one has maybe had a long time to think about it and ending the relationship, and the other thinks they're fine. You know, they're just going about their day. Maybe they are more like roommates, but they're happy being the one is happy being a roommate. The other wants this more impassioned, involved relationship. So, you know, that person who maybe has gotten to the end and said, I'm done, the other, you have to keep in mind that other, your partner may not be on that same page. So coming at it in a way that is maybe gentle and maybe has room for that other person and where they're at can win you a lot of brownie points, as it were, as you go forward and move down it. And you just kind of have to acknowledge that person as best you can. I recognize you may not be here today. How do we have to take care of that other person and get them kind of on board or on the same page if possible, or at least, again, open to hearing where you are.
How important is it, do you think, to be clear about why you're getting unmarried? And if the reason is going to be hurtful to the other party, mm-hmm. is it kinder to not say it? you know, it's kind of one of the, it's like the white lie thing. It's like, do I tell my friend she looks fat in those jeans?
Yeah, exactly. A very close friend of mine said something one time. She said, truth is like a sword. You need to be careful how you wield it. You need good sword skills, you know, when you're sharing your truth, quote unquote. And you have to also remember that your truth may not be the truth with a capital T, right? So we tend to get, I tend to get righteous, you know, this is the truth and you know, bowl someone over with it. But I work with my clients to take a step back and say, you know, we all have different perspectives and ours isn't necessarily the right one. And what do you hope to gain by sharing this quote unquote truth with that person? If you are really finished, you know, and you know, there's nothing more that you are able to give or willing to give or capable of giving, you know, what is the point of really unloading all of this onto the other person? Is it going to serve either of you? Maybe it's better for you to take all that stuff and go work with a therapist or a divorce coach or, you know, someone who can hold that space for you and you can process it. You know, it's not, if you're planning on working on the marriage, it's a different story. Maybe you can have a safe place where you can actually talk about how these are my needs. They weren't being met. You know, let's explore your needs and how I can help meet them, because we're all human beings and we all have needs. And if you're in a successful partnership, you want to address those things. And back to that previous conversation we had earlier, you know, you want to build in the kindness also. So, and that kindness will serve you whether you're going to go through and work on the marriage or whether you're going to go to divorce. People enjoy being treated with kindness.
they absolutely do. And in the case of my employee, that whole thing would carry over. It kind of makes sense if you can take it out of the emotional realm, and just it's a relationship with a cycle, with a life cycle, and there's goods and bads and ups and downs, and yeah, but it gets so charged, doesn't it?
Oh yes, it does. And emotions can be our friend, you know, they can be a roadmap to where we're at in the present moment. And I'm not afraid of big emotions and I don't want people to back away from them necessarily, but just to have more of an understanding of them and what it means to be extremely sad or angry or elated or any of those things.
Yeah. I think another word for the kindness that you've been referring to is civility. And it's mm-hmm. like sometimes we forget about that in that spousal relationship.
Sure. Sure.
Are there differences in the divorce of a couple who is say 40 versus a couple in their 60s? Do you see there's a big variety, or does that demographic part of it not matter?
I think, you know, that does matter and it does play into it. And maybe 40 and 60 have more parallels or similarities than in the 20s and in the 60s, you know. But typically in the 40s, you still have minor children, right? You still have, and whereas in your 60s, your children are likely grown. So you're not going to have a big part of the divorce, which is custody and child support and figuring all of that out. And that, speaking of being charged and emotional, having that, the kid part of it can be really exacerbating to the divorce process. A lot of fear goes into it around, will my children be all right? And what's going to happen when they go over to mommy or daddy's house? And how are their lives going? It's not just you and your spouse now, it's your children as well. There can also be a lot more kind of uncertainty in terms of the finances. In the 40s, you're still tend to be building things. Whereas in the 60s, maybe you're heading toward retirement. And so you kind of know a little bit more about your financial picture. But obviously, that's generalities and everybody's situation is very different. But I like to say in divorce, every divorce is unique. It's like a fingerprint. I mean, think of you and your spouse and all the variables that make up your life. It's just so difficult. I've never seen two divorces that are the same, quote unquote, but you'll see some generalities. You'll see some themes that play out, as it were.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. You say expect feelings of loss and grief. Are there stages of this process that we could expect? And are they the same for everybody? Is there a roadmap?
Right. Back to that fingerprint. They're not the same for everybody, but there is, you know, kind of like the stages of grief. There are, you're going to go through some of these possibly stages. They may not be in order, and you may not go from one to the next in a linear fashion, right? You may go from anger to sadness to back to anger again, you know, and it changes sometimes in the day kind of thing. But, and you know, there's the denial. There's definitely a lot of denial, especially if you're that spouse that maybe has just been living in denial. You weren't the one who wanted this. You weren't prepared. You didn't see all the red flags that the other person did. So there can be a lot of denial and anger and sadness. And, you know, eventually we get to hopefully that place of acceptance, right? That's the, whether we like it or not, whether that was our plan or not, the sooner we can get to acceptance, is the sooner we can start moving on to sort of the more generative types of life after divorce or life, you know, after separation.
Got it. You have had a lot of experience in this realm, obviously working with clients, but you've not only had a divorce yourself, you're the child of divorce. What advice would you give to a parent who's staying in a relationship, quote, for the kids?
Well, of course, that's a very complicated one. And again, I'm going to reference that fingerprint. So, you know, what I like to do when I meet with clients as a child of divorce who knows what it feels like to have parents separate, you know, you want to look at apples to apples, so to speak. Are you wanting to stay in an unhappy marriage that's very unhealthy for the kids, where there's a lot of fighting and conflict, and that's the fighting and the conflict and the trauma, whether you're married or divorced, that is what hurts your children. So there's some clients I know or couples I know that stay together for the kids, but there isn't that animosity, right? They are more roommates, business partners. The kids are living fairly in a steady environment. It's not ups and downs and fights and et cetera. So if you're able to do that, okay, that might be a worthwhile thing for your children. If you're staying in a really toxic relationship just because you don't want your kids to move back and forth, you know, that's something else to look at. Your kids would be far better served if you both got to a place, or even one of you got to a place where there's a really comfortable, safe, happy, joyous place that your kids are spending the majority of their time. That's healthier for a kid. The kid wants their parents to be happy just like we want our kids to be happy, you know? So, and they pick up on so much, as we all know. You know, we think we're hiding something from them. they know something's not right. They feel it. If not intellectually, they feel it on a sort of cellular level.
Oh, I think even pets, the animals know.
Oh, yes. You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
They know when to get the hell out of the living room because the storm is brewing, you know?
Exactly. Duck and cover. That's right. A lot of my clients have said, their kids say to them when they finally tell them we're getting divorced, goodness, it's about time. You know, Mom, what took you so long? Or Dad, oh, you know, we've been waiting. You know, they see it. The writing is on the wall.
Yes, I've had friends that their kids have said just exactly that to them. And, you know, and the parent is like, oh, I was holding it together for you and you knew.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, don't do me any favors, Mom and Dad. You know,
right, please. you encourage your clients to think outside the box when it comes to coming up with solutions and difficult circumstances. Can you give us an example of that kind of creative problem solving that you've seen people accomplish?
Sure. So, you know, some of us, we've referenced that truth with the capital T before. And, you know, we as human beings tend to think black or white, yes or no, A or B. You know, we have this, we get into this pattern of it's this or that. And so one of the things I work with all my clients is broadening that perspective, broadening the picture, broadening the story that we tell ourselves. You know, as human beings, we love a good story, you know, and there's nothing better than one that's full of drama and, you know, the sort of negative highlights, and we get stuck on this loop almost of this is the way it is. And, you know, let's expand that a little bit. Let's take it from the 20,000 foot perspective. You know, what else is going on? What else could go on? How could we look at it from a different perspective or a different angle? You know, what else? Lives are complicated. You know, we don't have to be set on one track. You know, there are so many other tracks or different colors or shades of gray, et cetera, all that. How do we look at it from another direction? And so we do that in a variety of different ways. You know, let's work on, you know, one of the things that I do touch on, and I'm sure you'll bring it up, is this divorce story. And what are we telling ourselves and what are we telling other people? And how does that limit us? How does that limit us and keep us held hostage in our unhappy life? Let's break that open and rewrite it.
I really like that a lot. I think anybody listening who's been in a relationship that is tanked, whether it was a marriage relationship or something else, you identify a role. I'm going to be the victim. I'm going to be the one that, you know, you cheated on me and that's why the relationship went to hell, or you did this or I did that, or whatever the story is. And I think is that what you're talking about when you're talking
yes.
about the story? So yes. What does a healthy divorce story look like?
So a healthy divorce story is taking your power back, because if we're making ourselves a victim, that other person has all the power, right? So whatever it is, whatever your little sentence that you tell yourself all the time, some of us say, I'm not enough, or, you know, yes, he cheated on me, or he's not fair, or she, you know, is a bitch, whatever, you know, like there's something that we have this sort of line going through that we hear and we add in all the dimension around it. So a healthy story is taking your part in it, or identifying your part in it, and boiling that down to a new sentence, such as I am enough, or, you know, I come by it honestly. Let's see what I can do to make a change. Or I contributed to his affair because I wasn't present. I didn't spend, you know, we weren't spending time together. I wasn't aware of his needs, or et cetera. So what part can I own in the story? And then how can I change it? How can I bring some power back into that statement? What can I do about it? You know, feeling out of control is what makes us crazy. And, you know, obviously life is full of things we can't control, but what's the part we can? What are the things we can identify? Even if it's 3% out of 100%, you know, what's that 3% that I can now own and say, I'm taking this back today. I'm going to change this to, again, a neutral or a positive statement. You know, I am enough. I'm okay. I'll be okay. You know, et cetera. And it can be a long story. We can go into it and make it many paragraphs, or it can be that brief little sentence, an elevator pitch, any of those things, you know, whatever works for you or you feel compelled to do.
When somebody's caught in that divorce story loop, you know, the one before it's become the healthy story. And I'm asking you this as a coach and a counselor yourself, because I'm sure people listening, we all have friends, we're of that age, friends that are in relationships that are either going to end in divorce, they're in the process of it, or they should be. Is it appropriate? And if so, how do you say it when somebody's in this loop? Is it okay? And do you even say, you know, you're kind of stuck in this divorce story loop and it's not very sexy. You know, you really need to come up with, you need to come up with a new gig.
Well, that's a delicate one. I'm going to reference the sword again, the truth that's the sword. You know, sometimes we just have to be a friend to that person and say, I see you're really going through something that's really difficult. That sucks, you know, and we have to, you know, like Brené Brown talks a lot about this. If we are telling them they should and they could and the, you know, pointing the finger, we're not really serving them. We're kind of touching on their shame and their, you know, to be really truly of service to them and vulnerable is to kind of say, I recognize that pain and you, I've had that too. And, you know, are you open to hearing how I moved through that? You know, would that be helpful to you? And if they say yes, great, we can have a conversation about it. If they say, you know, no, I need to do this on my own, or I'm stuck, or I, you know, they might not be open. So really identifying that heart to heart and opening up and being vulnerable with them, I think could lead to some really revolutions for them, revelations rather, and transformation.
Oh, I like that a lot. So, any advice for that roller coaster, the emotional roller coaster of when, you know, we've all had it. You wake up and you're like, I can do this. I can do this. I've got it together. And then within 15 minutes, you're a sobbing mass. You're calling yes. your mother and drinking in the middle of the day. What's a healthy solution for that?
Well, first I'm going to say we've all been there, just like you said, and it's human and it's what happens with this. So being kind again, to use that word, and being gentle with yourself and, you know, getting some support and understanding that that is normal. You are going to have big emotions. You're going to have big swings. You're going to have feelings of being strong and feelings of being weak. And to have that support so that when you're in that moment, you mentioned calling your mom or calling your therapist or going to a support group, and calling a friend who's been through it so that they can say, hey, you're going to be okay. This is normal. Let's embrace these feelings of sadness. If you weren't feeling sad, I would worry about you more because you're disconnected then from your feelings, right? And stuffing them somewhere. And that turns into not good things for our health. You know, that dis-ease turns into disease. You know, we want you to feel your feelings and express them. And so maybe that's, besides doing the support group, it's taking care of yourself, right? I work a lot with my clients on making sure that they've got self-care going through this. Are you just getting out to take a walk? You know, do you have a dog or a friend? You could go around the block. You know, you can start small. I happen to live in LA, so when I would feel very down, I would have to go to the, I would like to go to the beach. I would feel compelled to get somewhere where I could see the horizon or go up into the hills or mountains and see, you know, the 20,000 foot perspective I said before. I needed to get to literally shift my perspective so that I wouldn't feel in a lump, sorry for myself, you know, not able to get up. I had to move or get out or shift that perspective. And sometimes I work with my clients on just identifying one thing that day that is beautiful. So it could be something simple like your child smiling or a beautiful flower or a bird song out the window. So it doesn't have to be big, but to connect ourselves to that thing of life that is still beautiful and joyous and it's out there and around us. We're just sometimes shutting down and not seeing it. So if we can open up just even a little, just a little crack or light a candle or have a bath, you know, something.
Yep. Speak into the role of social media in divorce, if you would.
Well, it's definitely dangerous. Social media at large, I can't say I'm the biggest fan of it. It's a kind of a love-hate thing. Obviously, there's a lot being studied about social media right now and a lot being written about it. And, you know, the biggest concern is that it lives on, right? It's not something you say in the heat of the moment and we forget about it. You know, it's up there and everyone can see it, quote unquote, your air quotes around everyone. But, you know, that employer employee thing you referenced earlier, employers go online and look at this stuff. Are you out there acting without kindness, without civility, without, you know, are you just throwing up on everyone on the internet? You know, that stuff comes back to bite you, to hurt you. And often we do that not in a moment of civility or rationality. We do it in the heat of the moment. I've been triggered. I've been hurt. I'm really afraid. And so it's like a dog who's in a corner, you know, kind of biting someone because we're feeling scared and out of control. And so that's a bite. That's a bite that you're putting out there, and it can hurt not only other people, but you as well. So usually what I suggest or recommend is that, you know, you read it as if your child is going to read it. You read it as if, you know, your best friend is going to read it. Is it going to pass that sort of filter? Is it an okay thing that you would want to have there 5 years from now or whatnot? So, you know, it's nice to have a filter or someone watching out for you as well, or just take a break, you know, take a break. A lot of this stuff that you're processing is really private, and really for you to work on yourself, with your spouse, with your family, with your close friends, or therapists, et cetera, not with people you're not really friends with or connected to, or strangers.
Speaking of connections, what happens when it's time to start dating again? When is the right time to think about a new relationship?
Well, again, I'm going to reference that fingerprint. So everybody's different. I don't think there's a right or a wrong time to start dating. For me personally, I went out almost right away, probably a couple weeks into my separation, because for me, I felt like that would be an exciting thing to do. Not a serious type relationship, but just go out to dinner with another adult. I had pretty small children at the time and had dedicated a lot of my time to them. So to just be out and dress up and have adult conversation and be in the world and know that I am okay enough to do that was really helpful and healing for me. Other people find that idea terrifying, and they don't feel like dating or going out there for years. And both are fine. I think it's following your gut. It's following your desire. What makes you feel good? If you're out on a date and all your alarm bells are going off and you're so uncomfortable and you just can't wait to get home and in your pajamas, like, follow that, pay attention to that. There's no need. You don't have to be out there. There is no have to. It's do I want to? Does this make sense for me? Am I enjoying this? I loved dating. I had such a fun time doing it. I really enjoyed it. I mean, there were some low moments. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it, but on the whole, I really enjoyed it. And I kind of went at it with, again, that open mind. You know, maybe I'll learn something. Let me see what's out there. So it's kind of like an exploration. If you're ready for it, by all means, let's do this. And if you need support in the terms of, you know, a dating site or a coach or any, you know, friends who can bolster you and cheer you on and let you know that you are attractive and desirable, whatever can help you and get it so it's a positive or at least neutral experience, I'm all for it. You know?
Great advice. You have brought a gift for our listeners today. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. So it's the Divorce Story Worksheet. And it gets back to that point we talked about before of shifting your perspective. It's kind of can be very hard to do on your own. And it's not something necessarily a friend would be skilled at doing. So it's helpful to have this guide, this worksheet, to help them walk through the steps of, hey, here's how we identify the story. Here's how we rewrite it. And here's steps that are going to take you through it so that you're going to move from hopefully that place of negativity or victim, et cetera, to a place of more positive, I can do this, empowerment.
Excellent. Kira, thank you for being here with us today. I appreciate it, and I know our listeners do as well.
Oh, it was a wonderful time. Thank you.
That's our segment for today. Thank you for sharing your magnificence with us. I'm Sherry Clark from Fork in the Road, and I hope to see you again soon.